Hi, this is Allison Gingras, host of A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, your on-air book club. A Seeking Heart features daily live discussions, weekly giveaways, and author interviews. We don't just review books, we share them, and you're invited to participate by calling in or posting your comments on social media. The best part, no reading necessary. I got you covered. Please visit A Seeking Heart show page on breadboxmedia.com for showtimes and featured books. Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. This morning, we're going to be sharing this hour with Laura Pearl. She is the author of Erin's Ring. And you know what? I was going to ask you, Laura, before we went live, how you say the name of your publishing, the publishing house that carries your book. So first of all, welcome, Laura, to the show.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. And how do you say this?
It's Bezalel.
Bezalel.
Bezalel Books.
I wouldn't have been anywhere close to that.
Yes. And the publisher is Cheryl Dicko, which I said wrong forever. I said Dickow, and it's Dicko. So,
I would have
wonderful.
Said that wrong, too. It's a pleasure to have you. I follow your blog. Your blog, again, is String of Pearls, but it can be found at mumsyto5.blogspot.com. And it's you're so real. I love looking at the pictures of your five sons and your beautiful grandbabies. But before we get to the kids and the grandbabies, there's something that you and I share in common that I thought was really fun, that we both are married to our high school sweethearts.
That is so great. I have met some people that made it from high school, too. But when I went to college, everybody said it won't last. But, hey, it does sometimes, right?
Well, I kind of helped that along by going to his college.
See, I kind of did the opposite because when I met my husband in high school, he had gone to a different Catholic grade school. So we didn't meet until we got into ninth grade. And so when I met him, he always was talking about how he's going to go to Notre Dame and be a naval aviator. That was his dream. That's what his dad had done. And so I thought, well, that's his dream. And I got an application when the time came senior year, but then I decided to go my own way and see if, absence would make the heart go fonder. So
did he end up going to Notre Dame?
He did. He went to Notre Dame. And I went to Holy Cross in Worcester, Mass. So we were very far apart and it killed me. And when I said goodbye to him, I thought, that's it. He'll find a younger, prettier, smarter girl at Notre Dame, or not younger. I'm thinking young now, a prettier, smarter at Notre Dame. And I thought, it'll never last. I've met the guy and he's, I was just so sure he was the one for me. But, we just kind of got closer and closer over the years, through letters and phone calls. That was before all this texting and Skyping and everything. So so it worked. We just got closer. So
very romantic.
Sorry about that. I'm gonna mute my phone.
I love that your phone has that old fashioned dial tone.
I actually love it.
Yeah. I love that.
Very old school. So
it's fabulous.
Anyway,
kids don't have any idea what that sounds like these days.
I know.
Fantastic.
My text sound is a lot prettier. It's a harp.
That's funny. Now you're familiar with Massachusetts, so you will get some of the words that I say. I'm in Boston, a little south of Boston. And last week I had on Colleen Mitchell talking about her new book, Who Does He Say That You Are? And it was so cute. She tweeted out the podcast because after every show, there's a podcast available over at breadboxmedia.podbean.com. And she said in it, first of all, listen in because you get to hear all about my new book. But just to hear Allison say Martha.
Oh, my goodness. That was me coming from upstate New York to Boston. I was just floored by the accent. I was like, they say, are you going to go to the potty? And, I'm thinking, the bathroom, but it was the party. And I was like, it's so different, so different. But where we live in Dover, most of the locals that have lived here forever, they say Dova, so it's very Boston here too. So,
you're very close. Yeah. And there's many words that I can control, but Martha, Bia, those are two that are just, and I would say potty.
Yeah.
Be like, no, so. That's kind of personal, Allison. Why would you ask
me? It was a whole new world for me, but I loved it. I actually loved the accent. I thought it was so, endearing. I love it. So.
But, I say mine somewhere between Southie and the Kennedys. I'm not, it's somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah.
For the most part, I keep it under control. So how long have you been married, Laura?
Oh, well, we've been married, this year it'll be 36 years in December. So over 35 years. So got married in 1980. We graduated from college that May, and then the December following our graduation, we got married. So we were just 22 when we got married. So
our stories are very, very similar. My husband was actually 2 years older than I was. He went to both my proms. At one point along the hallway, I have pictures all through my hallway. At one point, I had my junior prom picture with him, my senior prom picture with him, our engagement picture, and our wedding picture. Aww. And then my kids were like, okay, that's kind of dorky. You just
I know it is. It's great. It's so great. He was my prom date too, but we didn't have a senior prom, but we had a junior prom. And I just think it's so fun. I mean, obviously, it doesn't always happen, but if it's in the cards, it's just so nice to be able to, grow up with somebody, I just love all the memories from high school. That's why the first book, Finding Grace, was so much, it wasn't autobiographical or even semi, but it was very much the kind of school we went to and all that. And of course, the guy was very much my husband, the love interest. So,
well, definitely going to talk a little bit more about Finding Grace in a minute, but I want to talk about your kids first. So you have got, I have to say that when I look at the pictures of your five grown sons, mm-hmm. it's hard for me to believe that you're actually their mom. First of all, they're giant boys.
Yeah, they are big. They're big.
They're very tall boys. Yeah. And you just look way, way too young, Laura, to be their
mom. That's nice of you to say. I think it's just that I'm still wearing my hair like I wore it in 1970. I think that's the problem. It's getting gray, but it's still just long in a headband. They're the only thing I ever wanted to do. The writing thing is just like icing on the cake. Just being a mom, it was always my vocation, my goal in life, and it's been great. And it's funny, because some people look at that, all those boys, while they were growing up, and they'd say, oh, poor you, God bless you. Oh, poor you, no girls. Are you trying for your girl? As if I was this, deprived woman. And actually, I've had such a great life. And in fact, one of my daughters-in-law this past weekend, I was visiting in Virginia, and she said, no, tell me, really, did you feel a little deprived of those mother-daughter kind of things? And I was like, I don't know if I'm strange or what, but I didn't. I just really felt like God gave me exactly what I was meant to have. And my husband the same, and we've just loved it. And now we've got four daughters-in-law who are like daughters, and granddaughters. So it's all good.
That is such a grace. That is my guest last week again, Colleen Mitchell. She is also the mom of five boys.
That's
kind of coincidence there. Very funny. Yeah. And I was going to ask you if you've added girls yet. I didn't think of the daughters-in-laws. Of course, they would be.
Yeah,
the girls.
That's been great. We got our first daughter-in-law in 2009 when my oldest son got married, and then not too long after he had identical twin daughters. So we were getting girls like crazy. He's now got four daughters between the ages of five and one. So he's all girls.
Oh.
I know, it's funny. After he grew up with all these brothers, he's raising these little girls, and he has made that transition perfectly. He's doing great. But then the next sons, 2, 3, and 4, got married in an 11-month span. From December of 1 year to November of the next, we had three weddings.
Oh my gosh.
So we got three more daughters-in-law in less than a year. And so it's been great.
That must have been an incredibly crazy yet blessed year. You must have been exhausted by December.
You're right. And what's funny, and I guess we're not talking about Aaron's ring yet, but when Cheryl approached me in the spring of, it was the spring of 2014 to write another book, and I thought, there's no way. We've got a grandchild was on the way, and we had promised to go help with that. He was coming in October. We had another wedding in November of one of our sons. We had travels back and forth to Notre Dame because our youngest son was a senior in college, and we had made the decision that we were going to go to every home game so we could see him because there's no one left at home. So we thought, why not?
Yeah.
We can fly for free because my husband works for the airline. So we thought, so I just looked at my schedule and thought, there's no way. And I had to have surgery. So I was like, there's no way I can write a book.
So
that was that year. But something, I think God gives you little nudges. I thought, I can't do this. My husband said, I know you can. And I said, why would you think that? We're so busy. But we prayed about it. And God has great plans for you sometimes when you don't think, you know, you're even up to them by that. But anyway, so.
Yeah, His grace is pretty incredible. When you lean on it, it's amazing. Truly is amazing what you can accomplish. Now, as we're connected through Skype and it's your husband's photo that's staring at me, and I am 99.9% sure I have been on one of his flights.
No way.
Well, he must fly out of Logan, correct?
Well, he sometimes commutes from Logan to New York, and then he flies out of New York. So he's in Logan all the time.
Yeah, I've definitely run into, I keep looking at his face going, where have I seen? Because I always say hello to the pilots if they're standing there on the way in. I always thank them on the way out. And I just think that that's a courtesy. They've done such a great job. If I've landed, I'm alive. They deserve a thank you.
That's me. I ironically was afraid to fly for so many years. Wouldn't leave my boys to go anywhere. You know, now that they're all spread out, that's all I do is fly to them. So
that's
it's
so funny.
Yeah,
we have that in common too. I used to be petrified to fly, and I don't know. I just, I guess maybe as I got closer to God and got deeper in my faith, it was just one of those things. Like He was calling me to ministry, and I had to go, and just had to rely on His again, His grace. And
yes.
Talking this morning with Laura Pearl, she is the author of Erin's Ring, and I'm not even going to attempt to say this company. Say it one more time for me, the publishing company.
Bezalel Books.
Bezalel.
Yeah. It's got a meaning, and I should know it by heart.
Well, we'll look it up because we're going to go to commercial now. Yeah. When we come back, we can find out what Bezalel means. And if I'm saying it correct, goodness gracious. It's just getting me practiced for next week's guest, which is Gary Zymek, whose last name I say at least 20 different ways in my attempt to say it correctly.
Yes. Okay.
If you haven't already done so, please go over to breadboxmedia.com. On breadboxmedia.com, you can find the links for all the shows, including the new friend of the show. Click on A Seeking Heart and find out what we're offering for premium members for A Friend of a Seeking Heart. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Redbox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Redbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart. Allison Jacobs here on Redbox Media. This morning, we're talking with Laura Pearl. She is a fiction author. As you know, I'm not the best fiction reader, but I really do enjoy a good fiction book, and I enjoy even better when I can talk to the author and they can tell me all about the book. It's like my very own Cliff Notes.
So
I almost called you Erin because I'm looking at my notes. So Laura, before we went to break, we were talking about your publisher.
Yes.
And I did look up, I looked, I love that you can cut and paste things. So right from her website, it says, people often ask me where I came up with the name Bezalel, right?
Yeah.
The worst part is like right after it, it says pronounced Bezalel. And I'm looking at it thinking I still can't say it.
I know.
You might not have listened to the show often, but I say something wrong and I struggle. We laugh because the Lord doesn't always call people to their best skills.
Yeah.
I love talking about Him. I just struggle with big words. Anyway, she goes on to say, when I began discerning the idea of starting a Catholic publishing company that would specialize in great books for Catholic classrooms, I knew that the name would be a critical piece of relaying who I am and what I hoped to accomplish. Bezalel. I'm so bad. Is Hebrew and means in the shadow of God. It perfectly reflects my own faith walk and my goals for the company. And she does have some amazing books, even though Allison can't pronounce the name of her company.
No, she's wonderful. I feel very fortunate because I stumbled upon her. You know, I'd been in my spare time, kind of over 4.5 years writing the first book, Finding Grace, thinking it'll never get published. You know, I'll run off copies for the grandkids. It's just because I've always wanted to do it. It was a dream that I thought I'd never realize, but I thought just going to do it. No deadline. So I was just slowly working on it. It's a long book. I did a lot of drafts and stuff. So as I'm getting towards the end, I just kind of Googled Catholic publishing houses, and an article about her popped up, and I just felt so connected to her because the reason she started her company was the exact reason I wrote the kind of book I did. I just thought kids need good stories about Catholics that aren't, you know, too pious or preachy. They're entertaining stories. They'll be evangelization tools without being, you know, a lot of people won't read a nonfiction kind of faith book, but they love a good story. So to put good Catholic characters in there, you know, it seems like every modern book I read that has a religious person in it, any sort of religious person, that's the person who's the most annoying, or they're the most, you know, corrupt or whatever, almost as if they're saying the best people are the ones that have no religion. And I thought, that's just not fair. There's so many wonderful, you know, faithful Catholics that, yeah, they sin and they make mistakes, but they find redemption and grace and everything. And I just thought, kids need that, and they need it without werewolves and vampires. They just need real people. So I thought she and I were connected, you know, so I got in touch with her, and that's how it all started. So,
and that was your first book. So Finding Grace. Well, tell us a little bit about that book. Cause we'll, you know, get to know you a little bit more, and you have two wonderful books. So first share a little bit of the plot behind Finding Grace.
Well, Finding Grace, it's a long book. It's only 332 pages, but if you've ever seen the book, it's kind of a big size, and the print is small. And probably if it was a regular size book with regular print, it would be 600 pages long. It's a long book. But the reason it's so long is because when I was writing it, I was really doing it, like I said, as a legacy for my kids and my grandkids. And so I decided I wanted to cover every topic near and dear to my heart, the pro-life aspect of things, the pro-chastity for young people, you know, the idea that you can sin, but there's always, always forgiveness in the church and the sacraments. You know, I wanted to have an Irish component because I love all things Irish. My husband's grandfather came from Ireland. My mom was a Kelly. I was like, I've got to have an Irish. I've got to have five boys who are Grace's older brother because I have five boys. No kidding. Everything. It's weird about that book because everything I love is in it. The five boys, the good marriage between Grace's parents, you know, I wanted to show that too, just because, you know, just a good example of a supportive and happy marriage and a happy family life, and people who are faith filled, but they're not like, I'm holier than thou. They're real people. They struggle. So all of that. So I wanted to kind of put everything I'd ever been interested in one book, including the Holocaust. I got that in there. I've always been interested in that. So I have a component about that. So this was like a 4.5 year long thing, but, but the main story was a young girl named Grace Kelly starts high school. She's not beautiful. She's got the name of a beauty. So she's insecure. She meets a guy that she just is crazy about, but of course he doesn't think of her that way. So what I did was I used the feelings I had for my husband, who actually did date me starting, you know, the summer after freshman year, how I would have felt if I'd been Grace, just wishing he'd had feelings for me. So I used my feelings for my husband to do Grace's, but she didn't get him. So that was, and I won't say how it ends, but during high school, she doesn't get him. Her best friend gets him. And it's just so painful for her. So I thought, okay, that's how painful it would be for me. So like I said, that I can't do a love interest who doesn't in some way remind me of my husband. And it's funny, I read an author once who said her husband was kind of jealous of all of her male love interests. Because, you know, if they were different than he was, and it's not, that's not why I make them like him, but it's just, I have a hard time when you start like you did at 15 with the love of your life and you're with him forever. It's hard to envision a guy who doesn't sort of share a lot of those qualities. So the big thing was the love story, but along the way, people were going to have terrible sadnesses. There's, you know, it's dealing with a death, dealing with the Holocaust, dealing with an abortion. A lot of bad things happen, but
Is it a period?
I guess you could say that. And that's another funny thing. When I first started out, I thought I'm going to write one book in my life. And I thought it was going to be this history of Dover, you know, like some of the stuff that ended up in Aaron's Ring, but even more like a big epic thing, because Dover has this incredible history.
And that's Dover, New Hampshire, correct?
Yes. Okay. And it's like, I mean, you name it. There were floods, there were fires, there were Indian massacres. There were, you know, it's the oldest a permanent settlement in the state, and so much has happened here. And then there's the Irish thing in the middle. And so I was like, I'm going to do this epic thing about Dover. But I changed focus because I got thinking, I'd done a bunch of notes for it. This was back in 2007 when I first started. My youngest son was about to start high school, and I thought, I finally have time. I'm going to start this book ran off a bunch of notes, spilled coffee all over them.
Oh, no.
And then I thought, maybe God's telling me this is not the book I was meant to write. So my husband and I went to Mass one day, and I actually said this prayer. It was a weekday Mass in August. And I said, God, if I'm meant to write a book and it'll be for the good of my own soul and for your greater glory, inspire me. And I actually, I'm embarrassed to admit, I was distracted during Mass because I went, oh, I got it. And I, the whole first chapter appeared almost full in my head.
Wow.
And I went home and I started writing notes and I pounded out 20 pages of notes. And of course, the book evolved a lot over the years that I was working on it. But the main thing was to have this girl who decides that she consciously decides she's going to figure out how to become a saint. And then she's inspired by the lives of the saints and she falls in love and all this other stuff happens. But like I said, I tried to put everything in the world that I would ever want in a book, in that one book, because it was going to be my only one.
So. That's so funny because I had Jamie Stewart Wolfe on from Pauline Books and Media, and I worked on a short project with Pauline Books and Media. They had a mercy retreat that you can get on pauline.org. And when I sent in my first submission, I had, I think, three in the retreat, she wrote back and she said, you're trying to say everything. If you say everything in this one book, you'll only have one book.
Well, see, but that was my plan. It's so funny because when I was young, I absolutely loved To Kill a Mockingbird. And I always thought, well, Harper Lee only wrote one book in her whole life. I love Gone with the Wind, Margaret Mitchell, one book in her whole life. I thought, I don't need a whole slew of books. I don't need to be a year-by-year bestseller. I just want to write one book. I want to get that one book written. So I really did think that was it. And I was happy that that would be the one book. But I did have, I've had mostly kind people, you know, say kind things. But this one person said, I think there's three books here, three different books. And she's probably right. But
How many people read trilogies, right? I remember my mom reading like North and South back in the 70s. Yes. And eventually it came out as a huge, ginormous book. So you can read it in pieces if that's how you feel it should be read. And then, of course, Harper Lee comes out with a book in, what, 90?
I know. Here, that destroyed my whole one book. In a lifetime thing. She was my inspiration. I was writing for the joy of it. I was one of those people. I started out a bio major in college, but then just couldn't do the chemistry. And I was, I don't know why I started with that because, well, I was trying to get a Navy scholarship. And I wasn't that great at math, but I loved literature. So I made my focus literature and I became an English major. And I thought writing papers was the most fun ever. My husband was an engineer and he said, how is that fun? But it was just so fun to me. So, but you know, it's funny. I didn't do a thing about it. You know, we got married and I was a substitute teacher for a while. And then we started having kids and I didn't do one thing about this until I was 49. I mean, very late bloomer until my youngest was getting ready to go to high school is when I finally thought, maybe I have time to, you know, really think about this. So
that's encouraging to me because I just turned 48 a week ago, and I'm just working really on my first book. So that makes me feel like that I'm not behind. I wrote one. I self-published it, but I really want to rewrite it and create it into something. Now that I feel like 10 years later, I know so much more.
That's exactly true. You know, it's so funny. This was a question I got from an eighth grader. I have a couple of nieces that are teachers who've been kind enough. One was a fourth grade teacher and the other an eighth grade teacher who had their kids read Aaron's Ring and had me come in. And so they had some really, I am just floored by the questions young kids will ask. And I'm like, wow, you, so one of them said, are you sorry that you didn't start writing sooner? It's like, wow, that's a really good question. Because I got an answer for you, for me personally, no, because I don't think I would have written the same book as a young person. Really what spurred me on with the writing was having raised kids and seeing the changes in the world and realizing, you know, that there's so many kids out there that could use the inspiration to, you know, fight the good fight, swim against the tide with all, you know, the secular
influence. I'm going to hold you right there for a minute. I can hear the music in the background.
Okay.
We're going to commercial. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We're talking this morning with Laura Pearl. She is the author of Erin's Ring, and you can find her blogging over on Mumsy, M-U-M-S-I-E, the number 2, and then 5, written out, F-I-F-F-I-V-E, dot blogspot. Oh, and then she just got a text. She told us how that would be.
I thought I turned the volume off. Whoopsie.
So that is okay.
Get my phone out of here.
Oh, I thought that was very, it was better than a foghorn.
Like
or it was. I felt so like angels just surrounded us.
Yeah. So
it's mumsy25.blogspot.com, and the book is Erin's Ring. And when we went to commercial, I apologize. I had to interrupt you because the music was playing in the background, but neither one of us could hear it. I think we're just so engrossed in our conversation. You're very, very easy to talk to, Laura.
So are you.
Thank you. And you were just telling us this great experience you had with an eighth grader who had asked you a question of, do you regret not writing earlier? And you were sharing that you just didn't think you'd written the same book because you'd learn, that wisdom of the age, I guess.
I do. Yeah, I do think, I don't know how wise I am, but I do know that with age comes a certain amount of, at least the life experience makes you just a different person. I feel like I had more to give. I can't imagine the book I would have written as a 20 something or a 30 something. I just feel like raising my boys and just seeing the effect of the world on everything, on all kinds of media, books, TV, movies, and realizing how few really entertaining and fun fictional stories were out there that could actually help them deepen in their faith. So I said to my husband, if this ever does get published, which I didn't think it would, but if it does, if it just affects one young reader in a positive way, that's my goal. I knew it was never going to make me famous, rich, or well-known, anything. It was just going to, that was my goal. And so, that's all I care about. If just some 13-year-old girl or boy or whatever picks up the book and says, this inspires me, grow deeper in my faith or make a different decision than I might have made, then that's so worth it to me. And I actually had an eighth grade girl after I visited my niece's classroom she read Finding Grace and she said, "It's making me think so differently about my faith. And now I'm asking, what would Grace do?" And I was like, oh my goodness, that makes me happy. That, more than, anything else. A bestseller wouldn't bring me as much happiness as that one comment. So, but I do think it would have been a different focus for me if I had done it when I was young. I think by the time I did it, I was like, okay, I have a goal here, and it's to, help young people to find something, that's wholesome and, entertaining and then has good messages. So I'm glad that I didn't get to it till I was older. I think God inspires you when, like you're just talking about, the inspiration comes, you get that little knock on the head, I think you're meant to do this, and then you can do it. So,
And I think you make a lot of sense, that sometimes we're ready, we think we're ready to do something, but of course God knows the rest of the story. He knows how incredible it can be. And he's like, yes, that is the idea. This is this, desire has been put on your heart. And as the Psalms say, that he delights in giving us the desires of our hearts. But we also know from Isaiah that his ways are not our ways. And we know that his timing is not our timing. And as you're speaking, and I'm thinking, when I started writing this faith sharing book that I've been working on, and I did write it. I self-produced it and it was good and I loved it, but I've learned so much more in the last 10 years that there's so much more now I can add to it. So I'm kind of excited to be working on that. And you're just inspiring me.
Yeah, you're right. Like I said, you're close to the age I was when I sat down at my computer and got started. So,
I hope it doesn't take me 4 years though.
Oh, well, you know what? That's partly my fault. Like I said, I was not focused. I didn't think of it as like a job. I kind of thought, I'm doing this because I love it. And so if things are busy with the boys or if they came home from college and they were around a lot, I didn't want to be off in my little world. So I would put it aside for weeks at a time. And I was a great rewriter. I mean, I think I'd done 15 to 20 drafts of every chapter before I finally gave it to Cheryl over at Bezalel Books, So I really took my time with it. I had no deadlines. I learned about deadlines with Erin's Ring. And that was a whole different process, whole different.
Well, I also think that you made a beautiful point right there that spoke to my heart very, very strongly, is that I still have my verse vocation, which is my children, mine are 20 and 17, but I also have a 10-year-old. And there are times that she's in school. She's adopted from China, and she's profoundly deaf. So she goes to special school. It took me 5 years to hand her over to school. I was homeschooling her because I'd homeschooled the others, and I really thought, like, I could do this. Yeah. But she got to the point where I realized, no, she needs specialists who go to school and learn how to do this. Yeah. And I wasn't prepared to go back to school and learn how to do this. Right. So I had to let her go. But then the Lord filled that time, that void, with these projects. And I love that He calls us to stuff, but then he's like, okay, but pay attention to your life around you.
Right.
And that gives you kind of the rhythm of when things should happen. So what happened with Aaron's ring that was so different?
Well, it was very night and day. So I, like I said, I've written the one book. I was like, I'm happy now. And I'd gotten a few comments from young people, and I thought, I've accomplished that goal that I had since I was a little girl. I mean, I can remember writing in little notebooks, little stories. The fact that I never did anything about it the whole time my kids were growing up is kind of funny, because when I was little, I was doing it and I loved writing papers in college. And then I handed in my last college paper and nothing until I was 49. I think that's so strange. I didn't even start blogging until I was almost finished writing Finding Grace.
Oh, wow.
I started blogging in 2011. And so funny, my middle son, who was very into the book, wanted to see it published. He'd been reading Finding Grace. He said, "Your blogging's not going to take away from your writing, is it, Mom?" I was like, no, I actually think the blogging is helping. It's kind of helping me kind of really, find a voice. But anyway,
it's true.
So this was a very different thing. I thought I was done, and I was kind of, I was trying to promote it, but not super energetically, because I'm like, there's nothing really at stake. We had paid the upfront cost to have that one published. Mm-hmm. But the thing I'm very grateful for is that it does have the Bezalel imprint and, her company behind it. And she takes care of a lot of this stuff of having it printed, and she does all that. Yeah. And I'm very proud to be part of her company, because I think she's just, she's got a real vocation there, and I'm just so happy to be involved. But I thought
she's
definitely
one of the Catholic rock stars out there.
Yes.
I love her work. I love the work she's done with Teresa Tomeo. She is an absolute Catholic rock star, and I can understand why you would love to be associated with her.
Oh, I'm very, very thrilled and humbled that she agreed to publish Finding Grace and everything. So that was great, but I thought I was done, and I was kind of, I'd blog post about it, or I'd do a giveaway on Goodreads, but I wasn't really super. But what I did start doing between the time Finding Grace was published and I started writing Aaron's Ring is I said to myself, I'm going to start helping to promote other Catholic authors, because it's very important. So I did a lot of reviews, and I started writing for CatholicFiction.net some reviews. And I think Cheryl, realizing how invested I was or whatever, she came to me spring of 2014, right? Yeah. And said, I have a proposal for you. I'd really like you to write another book for the company. This time it'll be on our dime.
Wow.
There will be a deadline, but I'd like it to be shorter and targeted at maybe a younger audience. Not quite as, like I said, Finding Grace touches on some pretty serious stuff, and this would be maybe a little less that way, so that it could be for, say, middle school, junior high, a shorter book. And she's, but there'd be deadlines. And of course, my initial reaction was, no, I can't do this. Like I told you, we had a son getting married, a grandson being born that we were going to help with, and we had travels. And I was like, how can I do that? I can't even do that. And my husband thought, he said, he was not going to pressure me, but he said, if you say no to this kind of opportunity may not come up again, which I knew. It's very, I was very lucky. I said, I know, but I don't know if I'm capable. And he said, I know you're capable. He has always been this way.
What a great guy.
He's always been my greatest. He used to say when we were young, and he knew I wanted to write a book someday in the far future, and he'd say, I know you're going to write that book someday. And I'd be like, what would make you believe in me like that? I'm doing nothing about it. But he did. He totally did. So with his encouragement and prayer, I decided we would do it. But I said, Cheryl, well, I can't do it in less than a year. I'm one of these people. I take a long time. She goes, oh, well, I'm telling you right now, that's too long for me. I'd like to have it out, maybe by the holidays. And this was spring. So we're talking, seven or 8 months later. I said, oh, so then, but I prayed about it and I decided, I'm just going to be brave. I'm going to be brave. So I did it, and I had deadlines, and I finished that book in 6 months, wrote the final words on it on November 1st, which is kind of funny because it's my mother-in-law's birthday. And I didn't plan that, but I finished on November 1st. And that's the day that you know, she's deceased, but she's the one who has the father who came from Ireland. I thought, how fitting is it that I finished on her birthday? But so somehow that happened. But I'll tell you how it all started.
Well, that's going to have to wait till the next segment, because we're going down to one minute in this segment. We have one more after it. But I just want to mention that this is an award-winning book.
Yes. In a year ago, last June, it received two awards from the Catholic Press Association.
We went the book for teens and young adults. Second place for that. And then third place for Catholic novels. That's a no small feat. That's pretty impressive, Mrs.
Thank you.
Pearl. That's pretty impressive.
Well, it was a surprise to me. I was very honored by that. So, yeah.
We're talking this morning with Laura Pearl. She is the author of the award-winning from the Catholic Press Association book, Erin's Ring. This is out from Bezalel. No, I don't know.
It's Bezalel.
See, I feel like the more I say it wrong, the more people are going to go look it up. So, like, that's how
that'll
I
make
justify.
Them good. Yeah, that's actually a good thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Send people to the website.
So. I want everyone to go to the website, and we'll have all those links and more. We have one more segment to go, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Redbox Media. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We're talking this morning with Laura Pearl. She is the author of Erin's Ring, and this is out from Bezalel. No, not even close. I'm looking at the pronunciation key. I think I completely psych myself out and think, I even prayed. I even asked my guardian angel to say the words for me. And I think she just giggled hysterically. She's like, I ain't helping you.
So Bezalel books.
There, and I'm very sorry, Cheryl. You couldn't say that. I'm so sorry. I personally apologize to you for never saying Bezalel correct. Yeah, I did it. Now I can move on.
There you go. You got it.
So where can, before we go back into the Erin's Ring, I want to talk a lot more about it. We only have this last segment left. So I want to make sure that we get in all the contact information. If people want to look more into the book and get a copy, Laura, where can they go?
Well, so far it's just out in paperback on Amazon. There's not a Kindle version yet. And Cheryl and I made that kind of decision together to kind of be, you know, old school, start with a hard copy. And then eventually I think it might be on Kindle. So it's available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I also purchase author copies that I can sign and send. And if people want to contact me through my blog, I could, you know, do that.
And give that address one more time, the blog address.
Yeah, it's Mumsie25. So it's MUMSIE, the number 2, and then the word 5 spelled out, and then .blogspot.com.
I'll have that link in the show notes, but I think it's important to say it again.
You can tell that when I started blogging, I didn't know much because it's such a crazy address. I tried to do String of Pearls, but it was used, but so I didn't really do a very good job with my address, but anyway. So,
that's okay. So, we can still find it. Luckily, Google makes life so much easier.
Right.
So if you want to get Laura's book, you can also just put into your Google search, Laura Pearl, Erin's Ring, and it comes right up.
Yes. And the other thing is, if there are any classrooms out there that are interested in, you know, a bulk order for classrooms, I think Cheryl will work with people, at some kind of a discount too. I think if you get in touch with Bezalel, that's another option if you have like a classroom need for that. So.
And is her website Bezalel?
Yeah, it's just, it's bezalelbooks.com.
Okay, great. So. And I will also make sure I include that link. And if I can find in the website the link directly to that offer, I will do so. Usually I can find stuff. So let's go back to Erin's Ring for the few minutes we have left and give us a plot synopsis. What happens in Erin's Ring?
Okay, well, a little earlier I told you that I was very fascinated with the history of Dover because there's a lot of great stuff. But the part that I loved the most was I found out that the very first Catholic church built in our town, which I think ended up being only the second established parish in the whole state, New Hampshire, came about because of the Irish mill workers. Because, you know, these Irish girls would come over. Well, actually, they're men and women, but they, you know, I have Irish mill girls that I have in my story. They had all these long work hours, tough job. They're all sending money back to Ireland to their poor families in Ireland. But the mill had all these rules. You know, they lived in boarding houses that the mill approved and had to be in by 10 and they couldn't talk on the job and they couldn't do this, they couldn't do that. I found one of these pamphlets from the Kachiko Manufacturing Company, this textile mill, and it said, you know, you're supposed to attend services on Sunday. Well, the Catholic girls there was no Catholic church in town. The Irish Catholics that came here to work had to rely on like a visiting priest coming through every, you know, it might be every 6 months to say a mass at the town hall or at someone's home or whatever. And so they wanted a church. So this group of Irish mill girls went to the superintendent of the mill and said, we're going to walk out. We're going to quit unless you get us a church. And the mill actually deeded the land for a church to these people and they started building their church. So the thing that's kind of neat is we go, you know, our churches have, we've had a few parishes come together, you know.
Emerge, yeah, collaborations,
and it has a new name, the Parish of the Assumption. But the church building that my husband and I attend every Sunday is St. Mary's. Well, before St. Mary's, it was a wooden church called St. Aloysius that the Irish built.
Oh, beautiful.
With the land and then it burned down. I thought, what an interesting,
No, I'm just responding to your awesome story.
I thought maybe my connection dropped. I was like, anyway, so the church was built, in 1830 and then was fine for 40 years, but then it had a fire and they lost it. So they rebuilt this brick church. And that's a church my husband and I attend now. And so that's been there since 1870. I'm trying to think if it was 72 when they finished building it. So I thought, what a great history that the Irish had so much to do with this church being built and the parish and everything. So I thought, you know, what an interesting story that would make. So I always thought it would be fun to do that, to do the connection between the mill and the church and everything. And plus, Dover's mill workers were the first ones, aside from that small, you know, thing where the Irish girl said, we need a church. There was also a bigger strike where all the women workers, they were mad because their pay was going to be docked 5 cents a day. So they went on a big strike. And everybody knows about the Lowell girls striking because that's a more famous one. But Dover was actually the first. This mill was actually the first. So I thought, what a really fascinating history. Wouldn't it be fun to have immigrants coming, you know, in my story and go through all that stuff? So my first plan was to have Molly McCormick, the girl in the story in 1998, find this clattering in the dirt by St. Mary's Church and wonder where it came from. And then I was going to go back in time, tell the whole story from start to finish. And then at the end, we'd find out how it all tied up. But as I got going, I thought it might be fun to go back and forth in time. So that's why a couple chapters in the 1990s, and then we go back to the 1800s and it goes back and forth. And so you're finding out the story of the history of the ring and the history of the Irish while these two girls in the present are going through their own struggles. And anyway, so I thought it was an interesting way to show how no matter what century you live in, people have these sadnesses and struggles and how faith plays a part in, you know, in getting them through things and everything. So I just, it kind of evolved into a back and forth story that I hoped would work. So,
Well, I'm guessing because the Catholic Press Association gave it 2 awards, I'm thinking it worked for you.
Well, and I have Cheryl to thank too, because, you know, I used to hear people who wrote books say, oh, the story evolved. The characters told me what they were going to say. And I'd say to my husband, how can that be? You know, this is before I started writing. But it really is true. Things evolve. So you start out and you think this is my plan. And then the plan totally changes. And I had Molly McCormick, this young girl, and I wanted her to find the ring. And she was like I was as a young girl. Give me some old thing. And I wonder, whose was it? And what's the story behind it? And all that. I thought that would be interesting. But then but she came from a happy family, you know, big, happy family with intact mom and dad and lots of siblings, you know, faith intact. Everything was good. And Cheryl kind of said, you know, as I was showing her early drafts, she said, you know, it might be good to give Molly a friend who's life isn't quite so.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, you know what? That would be so much better. And so I can thank her for Teresa, the other girl that's who comes in the story.
That's why editors are so important. The unsung hero of every good book is a wonderful editor.
Yes. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to have Teresa and she's going to be struggling, but what can the struggle be? And it just sort of evolved, you know, and I feel like the story is thousands of times better because of the girls and the way their friendship affects each other and the way it ties in with things that happened in the past. You know, similar sad things happened to some of those Irish back then, and then they happened to Teresa's family, and how do they get through it kind of thing. So it actually ended up being a way better book because of the girls having that friendship. So
did you have to do research? Like, did you spend time finding out the historical part of it so that you could write better, or it was just stuff that you kind of just knew?
No, I did go, and I wrote it into the story because I went over to the library and they said, would you like to use our historical room? This cute young girl worked behind the desk, and I said, yes, I would. And she gave me a big ring with a skeleton key. Went up to this musty old room filled with stuff. I thought, oh, I've got to write this in.
Oh, that's definitely.
So the room was awesome. And you know, it was 6 months from start to finish. So it's not as meticulously researched as if it had been a 400-page epic written for adults with all kinds of, but I did find, you know, some really neat things, like a little pamphlet with rules for the Kachiko mill workers. I was like, oh, this is just so awesome, you know. And I found out what they made, you know, how much they earned, what their conditions were like. And then I had to read some of the stuff about Lowell, because the funny thing is I had a hard time finding much information about the Dover strike, but then I read somewhere that the town tried to tamp it down a little because they didn't like the negative publicity. So I was like, maybe that's why I can't find it. And if I had more time, I probably would have delved way deeper. But I thought, well, I'll write that into the story too, that the girls don't get every piece of information that they're looking for, you know. But I used the Lowell strike to kind of maybe have a picture of what the signs they carried might have looked like and everything. So I did spend some time in that room, and I absolutely loved it. But then it was cute. One of the kids at one of the classrooms I spoke to said, was there a Mrs. Driscoll, you know, the elderly librarian who helps the girls? I was like, not exactly. You know, the girl that helped me was very young. She was probably a college student. But I thought, oh, I need to have an older lady who somehow is tied to the ring in some way. And so that's where she came from. But, you know, I think the characters in this story were more completely fictional than the ones in Finding Grace. In Finding Grace, they started out as people I kind of knew, and then they evolved. With this, you know, it really was sort of making people up more. You know, of course, Molly's dad and his mom and their relationship reminds me, you know, the dad is a pilot, sweet, you know. Yeah. So there's things that...
So there's those elements. Laura, I can't believe this. We're at the last minute of our time together. So that's even more reason. You've whet my interest. I want to reread it. I'm going to go to Erin's Ring. Again, you can go to Mumsy 25, that's Mumsy, M-U-M-S-I-E, the number 25, spelt out, .blogspot.com to learn more about Laura and her writing. Laura, is there another book coming?
The kids that I talked to in Chicago, fourth graders, want a sequel. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I will say that I have an idea. I just don't know if I can make it happen. But it would be a sequel, and the girls learning about another really amazing event that happened that would be...
Well, here's hoping. Hoping. Laura, thank you. Laura Pearl, thank you so much for joining
me
today.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.